bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. It's a Thursday. What can I say? We're all wrong. Thursdays are the new Friday, apparently. But the weekend hasn't started yet. I'm working tomorrow, so I can't. So, there we go. Alex is stuffing a sandwich back, but it's corned beef, so that's all right. And he's an EastEnder, so it's okay, doubly. We've got a great panel to discuss the week's photo news. Top left, Mr. Chris Forsman from Ars Technica. How you doing, mate?
Hello.
Daddy.
Sounds creepy when you say it.
Yes. Thanks, mate. How's things been?
Pretty good.
Good lady doing well?
She's hanging in there.
Yeah, in a bit there. Of sickness this morning, you say?
Yeah.
Well, leave her alone then.
It's your fault.
I made her lay down. She was going to go to work.
No.
Someone's got to pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true, but she could take a day off.
And while we're on the subject of paying the bills, Alex G. Fox, eating his corned beef sandwich, cleared mouth now. Yeah, no. He's hoping for some good questions later, but we haven't got any.
Yeah, I'll make them up.
Yeah, how you been, mate? Rushing in from work.
Oh, no, it's good, isn't it? Makes me look really, really, really popular and busy.
Yes, I know that feeling.
That's very good, thank you.
It's going to wear off in November, though, I think. And last but by no means least, Mr. Kevin Newsom from Newsom Studios. How's it going, buddy?
Good morning. How are you?
All right, mate. All right. We've got decent weather here. It's been quite sunny this last couple of days. So
sunny. That's
we like sunny, but it's cold. Autumn's coming. If you're a photographer, now is the time to go out and start shooting the trees because they're turning really, really quickly here. Chris, it must be beautiful by you.
It's not right outside my window. It's just a brick wall.
Yeah, that's because you live. Yeah.
But yeah, it looks quite nice.
No, I remember a long drive this time of year from Detroit to, I want to say Green something or other, but it wasn't Green Bay. It was Grand Rapids, that's it. 2.5 hours of driving along there, straight through the middle of the forests, all through there in October, and it was stunning. I've never seen so many colours of red and brown and yellow. Really, really good. I'm sure we'll have to have some questions on autumnal photography for later on. But the week in photography, what's it been? It's not been a hot topic particularly, but Kev, you wanted to start us off with the Skyview camera from Nikon.
I think that is the most hysterical thing I've ever seen. I can't wait to see somebody buy this thing. But apparently you pick a camera up and you throw it, and it takes pictures at zero gravity or at some point. And really, as I looked at it, I thought, why would anybody do this? Why? I still haven't got an answer to it. But it's just funny to hear these engineers explain how it works or why you would do it, or, you know, from point A to point B, and somewhere in the middle it's going to slow down to zero gravity and take a picture, and somebody at point B better be there to catch it. I mean, that's ridiculous. Who would do that?
Well, what are we going to say this is worth? I love the fact it's got those little spongy bits on the bottom for if it lands on the lens, it doesn't smash it. That's the lens cover.
Well, listen to what it says. It says, if a user makes the point A the point B, which threw the camera up, the speed V and the vertical direction of the digital camera 10 at this point A, well, since gravity influences the digital camera 10 thrown, as everyone knows, the speed V becomes small gradually and eventually is set to zero. When this speed is set to zero, the digital camera 10 reaches its highest point. The digital camera 10 then falls in response to the influence of gravitational acceleration, and the digital camera 10 is caught by the user at point C. Who thinks up stuff like that?
I think that translates to, you can throw it.
You know what it translates to? You know when you're driving on a bumpy bridge, say on an A road, so you're doing about 50, and you hit the apex and you get that giddy feeling in your belly?
Yeah, yeah. That's
that is the point at which this camera takes a picture.
Yes.
Right.
It takes a picture of your giddy belly.
Exactly. But this is a good example of a use of this camera. I mean, obviously, they've got the aperture setting a bit wrong and the focal point a bit wrong. but it's a very nice top-down cleavage shot. And I can't think of any other use for this camera but looking down the tops of people's blouses.
All right.
So, of course, that's what you think of.
How much are we willing to pay for that privilege?
Well, if it was a bit sharper, a few more quid.
I didn't see a price on this thing, but I'm guessing whatever.
No, it's
they paid too much.
No, it's a Nikon patent. To be fair, it's not a real camera. And the bit on the back there, I'm guessing, is some kind of fin so that it stabilizes at the top of the apogee. They're saying in the chat room. I don't know whether that is apogee or not compared to zenith, but I don't know. But the principle is that Nikon reckon they're going to sell loads of these when camera 10 equals zero. There you go. I think it's cool. I think it is kind of cool. I mean, it's you know, whatever makes difference. How many of you guys have taken pictures where you throw the camera in the air?
Oh, yeah, people have done it.
I've done it loads.
Yeah, there's an app that does it for the iPhone. I'm wondering if prior art's not going to come in here and invalidate the patent.
But. Didn't they do a ball that before that had six cameras in it?
We've discussed this before. A year ago.
I said that to Kev before the show. I'm sure we've talked about it.
I don't know if it was this, but we have discussed something and we got very technical about the, you know, the apex of the curve and all that nonsense because we didn't know what we were talking about, and so we thought we'd try and make it sound a lot better than it is.
Well, we certainly sounded more intelligent than you talking about damn blouse shots.
Look, with the absence of intelligence, I'm going for honesty.
Go on then.
Right, sports-wise, that'd be a bit of fun. I mean, you could have a laugh with this. I mean, as long as this is, a V-plus type camera toy, then it'd be great. But I suppose you could, I don't know what you could do, stick it on a kayak, it would be fun. But, you know, I mean, if you use it as a toy and you sort of go to the park and you play, if they make it into one of those things that, you know, that it looks a bit like a rocket and you throw it to each other, there's like an aerodynamic.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. If they sort of do it like that and it's part of the game as you throw it to each other and when it's in the air it takes a picture of the person that's going to catch it, that could be fun.
Yeah.
So, you could make, but it's got to be a toy because the actual fact that you sort of throw it in the air and you wait for it to come down and it takes a picture, yeah, there's not that many situations where that's going to become something you need technically to do unless you actually just want to play around with it. Be good for concerts. You could, you could stick it in like a beach ball. You know, when they bounce beach balls around the audience.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So you could have one of these in a beach ball, and every time someone hits it, it could take a picture of the...
Chatroom wants to know if it can be dropped from a weather balloon on the edge of space. Topical.
Wouldn't land on its feet, though.
Certainly seems like it ought to be, right?
Yeah. It spin too much, though, on the way down, unfortunately, till the air got heavy. Go on, Chris, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say, I think the Flaming Lips have something just like what Alex was describing, the beach ball with the cameras inside.
Yeah. See, I thought it was six of them or something like that.
I don't remember if it's still cameras or video, or I can't remember, but I think I've seen them do that at shows before.
Yeah. We should point out that Felix Baumgarten did jump from space as well this week, which is why the comment was there, in case you've been on Mars. But big balls.
You somehow missed that.
Big balls. Very impressed. Huge, huge, huge leap. Very happy he's still alive as well. You can talk crap.
I missed all the excitement. I was shooting all day and didn't even... I had heard something on the news about it coming up, but I had absolutely forgotten about it until that night when I got home. And everybody was, oh, my gosh, did you see that? I couldn't believe it. I mean, you looked at Facebook, and everybody was talking about it. I missed the whole thing. I didn't catch it.
You didn't. It's 10 minutes.
It's like missing the moonwalk is what I was told, you know. I didn't miss
that.
I don't
know about that. No, steady on. One giant leap.
Beginning was impressive, and the ending was impressive. The bit in the middle was a bit repetitive.
Well, the falling and spin. No, the spinning bit was pretty wild. I mean, he was really going round at some point, and I thought, well, that can't be healthy. That can't be good.
Yeah.
That's got to hurt.
Maybe it's going to be like space tourism. It's going to be the ultimate adrenaline junkie trick.
His head on the inside of his helmet every time he went round.
I mean, but he was really the real bit that really the first thing, I was like, how did they get such good pictures? And then they sort of panned out. I was thinking, oh, someone's going to come up with there's a conspiracy theory, because how did they get such good pictures of him jumping out? And then I noticed it had big arms on that capsule thing, which was quite cool. But I just love the fact that after all that, he just, it's the perfect landing. I bet he's like jumped
from... Stood on his feet.
Mm. Yeah, like 3,000 feet and fallen flat on his bum. And he jumps from the edge of space and just lands on his feet. Completely nonchalantly lands on his feet. Very impressive.
Well,
the camera work was good. Yeah.
As someone who has jumped from 14,000 feet, now I realize it's not the edge of space.
It's not even your doorstep.
Once that chute opens, it is like smooth sailing.
Yeah.
So... Once you've got the chute open, and he's obviously an experienced jumper. I mean, I've seen those guys like. So when I did my jump, I went out to the airfield. And they basically just have a plane that fills up with people, and it goes up, and they all jump out, and it comes back down, and they fill it up, and they just do it all day long.
Mm.
And some of these people have like the more experienced ones. They have a thing where they just pay like a monthly amount or whatever, and they just get to jump as many times as the plane will let them get on. So they go up, they jump, they pack their chute back up, they get back on the plane and keep doing it. And some of the people, like, are they really, you know, they get like all coming in all crazy angles and do little tricks and stuff while they're landing. So I'm not at all surprised he made a nice smooth landing, because it's... Once that chute opens, that part's really the hard part. Really, is looking over the edge and being like, "Okay, I'm really going to do this."
I got the impression he'd done it before.
Yeah, it'd be quite funny if it was his first time, though, wouldn't it? He'd be going up the guys. Are you sure they normally go this high?
Yeah,
it's just normally what happens.
Booker in the chat room says, "Did the Queen go with him?" No, I don't think so. Landing was a complete anticlimax. Tenex wanted a broken leg, obviously. Now, talking of nutters that jump from the edge of space, if you want to capture that kind of thing on camera, you need a GoPro.
Mm.
And wouldn't you know it, those bastards at GoPro have bought out another one, a Hero 3. I call them complete and utter bastards because I've just finished buying two of the Hero 2s. I'm not kidding you. 4 weeks ago, I purchased two Hero 2 cameras, and the bastards have brought out a Hero 3. This thing does, and talking about the video settings that we did last week, this thing does 1080p at 60 frames a second, and it does 120 frames a second at 720p, and it takes still images, and it's got a remote thing, and it does all the stuff that the 2 does, but just a lot better. Bastards.
Yeah, well, they've upped the game even more on that, because if they do 4K recording... 15 frames, fair enough, but 4K, it's pretty impressive. And they got 2.7K somewhere in the middle.
This thing's the size of a matchbox, Alice. Alex. No, Alice? Who the hell is Alice?
I can't tell the proper version of that song. Yeah, but also they do three colours. They do three colours, but unlike most manufacturers where you sort of have different colours and it's the same gubbins, which is a favourite word of mine, their colours equate to the version that you've bought. So the black one is $400 and it does all the flash stuff. And you go down silver, which does only slightly some of the flash stuff, but it's only $300 or $200 even. And then you get the plain old boring, you can't be very wealthy, you've bought the white one for, I think it's $100. I can't find it. Hold on, where is it? There you go. So it's $400, $300, and $200. There you go. So they're actually outing you with the color of your Hero 3 camera by showing what version you've bought.
See, I mean, just a comparison here, just so that you guys understand the sizing here. This is the basic. That's the Hero 2.
Oh, that's 25% bigger. Well, 30% bigger, in fact.
Well, the new one is about 2/3 of the width of that.
Yeah, it's 30% smaller.
The Hero. I mean, that shoots 1080p and it shoots it brilliantly, and I'm very happy with it. I'm not that upset.
Don't your customers get a bit upset when you turn up with that, though?
Yeah, they go, well, I thought I was paying you that much a day. But here you go, that's a Hero 2. And that's how small it is. And this one is smaller than that. And it does 120 frames a second at 720p.
What are the dimensions on that? You said matchbook or something like that. Because there's nothing there to give you a perspective on it.
You guys don't have matchbooks, as in like a sliding open tray of matches, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's about the size, surface area there, of a book of matches. There's got to be some dimensions on the website, you lazy git. Because I've got to look for a bloody ruler now. Which I'm not going to find. But I'm guessing it's about 2.5 inches by 1.5 inches.
Okay.
And the depth is about an inch. I mean, there's my thumb. That thumb joint's an inch and a half.
They're small, like...
So, there you go.
About yay big, right?
Yeah, there's my thumb joint. Right? It's an inch and a half. There you go.
It's very hard to tell when you're holding your hand in front of a webcam. No? Actually, your fingers are so far apart, your entire head and your headphones fitted within that shot.
I'm crushing my head.
But there you go. Hero 2 is beautiful, beautiful camera. My pick, definitely. Love them to bits. And you get a ton of other attachments. So there's an extra battery pack that you can get that just clips on the back. Now, I'm hoping that all of those... There you go. So it doubles the battery life. And I'm hoping that all of those attachments are still going to fit it. And then you get different housings for it as well, which is a big old thing. And that,
well, that makes housings big enough for you to actually be able to use it.
And you get little, that's a tripod attachment there, so it fits on a standard tripod. And then it goes in this little case, which is waterproof, and you can dip it in the water and it doesn't get wet, and you can still operate all of the controls. They're brilliant. They're really great cameras. I love them to bits. I've shot some really good footage with them in the last few weeks. But there you go. The price is $400, $300, and $200 respectively for the ones that the black, the silver, and the whites, as Alex says. But they are really stunning bits of kit and well worth the money. Well worth the money. Bastards.
Oh, you like the fact that it's got built-in Wi-Fi now.
It's not built-in, is it?
Yeah.
Don't you have to use it? Oh, bastards, yeah. I've just bought the Wi-Fi
kit. I'm reading the picture in the background. It says Hero 3 Black Edition, 30% smaller, 25% lighter, 2x faster image processor, 4x higher resolution, 2x frame rate, 3x faster
photo
capture, 2x better low light performance, sharper lens, reduced distortion, improved sound, Wi-Fi built-in, Wi-Fi remote, and app compatible.
There is a GoPro app. That was the thing that they were releasing this autumn. I did say it's coming out in the next 2 weeks, a couple of weeks back.
And like control the camera from it, right?
Yeah, you can. But the one thing that you need is that, which is the Wi-Fi, if you've got the Hero 2, that is the Wi-Fi adapter that goes on the back, and you need that, which comes with it, which is the controller for it. But you can remote trigger it for up to 180 metres, 540 feet. So it's very good. It's very, very good. There you go. And you can buy loads of little application and stuff like that for them. And say, well worth the money. Bastards. Nikon have come out with, are coming out imminently, it would seem, with a new lens. Supposedly, the 7200 f4 will be generated in the next 2 weeks. It's got, I was going to say virtual reality then, it's not. It's image stabilization, isn't it, the VR system? And
vibration reduction.
Vibration reduction, thank you. And no word on price, though, from what I can see in the story. The current lens sells for $1,200. So, oh, well, that's after a $150 rebate. So, you Nikon users, what are you thinking?
Empty. A bit late.
Why?
This was supposed to be out 2 years ago.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
But it's going to be out on October 24th, so you've still got another week to wait yet, mate, so don't hold your breath.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Need a 70 to 200.
I mean, I've got to say, I mean, I shoot nearly everything that I shoot with a 50mm lens fixed or a 40mm lens fixed. The pancake one's really, really good for video and for stills. But occasionally the 70-200 comes out, and I've got to say it's probably my second most used lens. Because it's just that it's good to sit back a little bit and be able to move around less conspicuously. Weddings and things like that is really, really good for that kind of stuff, where you can shoot fly on the wall type thing. But I mean, is it an amateur lens or a pro lens a bit more? I've got to say I use it a lot less for pro work. I'd use it more probably for going out on the day out or like I say a wedding or something like that.
Oh, I mean, f4, so it's got a, you know, it's, you're not going to be opening up too much, are you? So indoor work, it could be a bit of an issue at the
No, it can be good in studios if you want to sit behind the lights.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but it's not something that you're going to be able to do very much indoor work I mean, like the wedding, the actually on the stand with your lights and everything, fine. But the actual sort of candid moving around sort of shots, you
want to have. Yeah. You need to get down to 2.8. Kev, yeah, have you got a 7200?
I've got the 7200 2.8.
Yeah.
It's the VR2. I just got that. I just replaced my old 8200, which was not a VR. And I did that back in May. And this new one's $2,400. Now, what they're talking about here is really 7200 F4 as opposed to 2.8. It says VR. I'm assuming it might be a VR2 or some kind of a next generation VR. But they're saying it should be much less expensive, which would make sense being an F4 versus a 2.8. They're also talking about a 24-120 F4 to replace a kit lens for whatever replaces the D700. Now, that would be wise on their part to start putting people into fixed focal length or fixed aperture lenses as opposed to these variable aperture lenses. Everybody gets a variable aperture lens as a kit lens because they're cheap to make. And, they can sell those. But nobody really understands what that means until they get it in their hands and they start understanding a little bit about lens technology and focal lengths and f-stops and things like that. Suddenly they realize, this is not a great lens to have. It's cheap. Yeah, it was nice, but it's not great for low light situations or where you want to actually manually control, your shutter speed and your f-stop. So it's nice that they're going to go with something that is a fixed lens if they're talking about making it a kit lens for that camera. But the 7200 is, as an f4, not bad. I'm happy with my 2.8.
Okay. Chris, any words?
The interesting thing about this is it's just like a 7200 2.8. It's one stop difference, but it makes it much smaller and much lighter and easier to carry. At the same time, digital SLRs are cranking ISOs up to 25,000 or higher, and so the extra f-stop that we would like to have when we're shooting in low light. And, I just think back even like 10 years ago when 800 speed film was, really like pushing the limit for a pro to do, work. Now we can just crank that ISO up and still get relatively low noise images and get away with an F4 aperture. And at the same time, the size of the lens just makes it easier to carry around. It makes it easier to handhold all day long while you're doing a shoot. So, I think it's really appealing, and obviously it's probably going to cost less. I think Canon's
is it going to sell based on the reduction in size alone though?
It's going to be reduction in size or reduction in cost, because to give a comparison and who knows what Nikon's pricing is going to be, but the Canon makes a 7200 and a 2.8 with image stabilization, and they make an F4 with image stabilization, and the F4 lens is about half the cost. So, if you could spend $2,200 or you could spend $1,300, which one, depending on whether you're a pro or not, or how much of a need you need for that lens or how much you're going to have to hold it, I think all is going to be like factors to weigh, but. If you can save a grand and still get similar results, I would rather save a grand.
Well, no, this is what I find quite surprising is that the same lens in the US is they've hit the price point at the same thing for the equivalent lens for Canon. So $1,199 is the 70-200 f/4 ISUSM lens.
Uh-huh.
Here in the UK, you can get the non-IS lens at 2.8 for £900, so that's about $1,300, and you can get the 7200 F4 without the IS at $495. I mean, at F4, they're really trying to flog the image stabilization there against the Canon version over and above it, I would have thought, but is it enough? I mean, certainly, the one thing that I've been going on the last couple of years is the fact that, oh, God, I'm really twitching about Nikon. I feel like jumping ship. And I've got to say, in the last 3 months to 6 months, Canon have really kind of pulled me back in. And to a certain degree, some of the lenses have been a lot more expensive. on the Nikon range, and that's one of the things that stopped me jumping as well.
Well, I've just noticed, I'm looking at this, okay, and I'm thinking, right, okay, let's think of a serious use for this camera, or this lens, rather. Now, if you stuck this on one of the newer Nikons with such good high ISO capabilities, as Chris mentioned, if you've got, I mean, the way they're saying this, they're talking about a new VR system. So say this is VR3, which will make it, because you know, the original VR system, they claimed to, you could hand hold down, I think it was 4 stops. Complete nonsense, but that was their claim. So if you can use this F4, say for a sports photographer at 700 or 700, 200, but because it stays the same the whole way through, it's not a problem. You're not going to worry so much about depth of field, because if once you're already 70 mil away, whether it's a 1.8 or a 4, you're not going to gain or lose too much. If you can whack it up to something like ISO, whatever you call it, up to 1600 or further, then you're going to be able to shoot things at a 500th of a second at F4. And if the low light is as good as we know it is, you're going to be getting the equivalent of a non-VR lens on, say, an older Nikon of a 1.8. Yeah. So to bring out something that is $1,000 or to $1,200 that you can use for sports photography, and, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about the pro, because the pro is still going to spend $5,000, $6,000 on the lens. But for anyone else using, say, a 600, which, or an 800 even, something that's, you know, within the range of a keen amateur, they're going to have a lens which, if you like, is the equivalent of the camera. It's not the top of the range, but it does enough tricks to be able to produce something equivalent of top of the range. So I'd have said, you know, thinking hard about this, with the new cameras, this lens would act maybe not exactly as good as the old £5,000-6,000 lenses, but it's going to be a comparative and a lot more value for the price than you would have got before. So I reckon it's not a bad idea.
Cool. All right. So the thumbs up is there or not?
The idea thumbs up, definitely.
So, but Chris, you're saying the size is the swinger for you.
I think that's going to be an important factor for some people. Mm. And the price, I mean, there's no question the price is going to be a factor. Well, assuming Nikon adopts a similar strategy to pricing, I think it's going to be a factor for others as well.
Sony is taking full-frame E-mount interchangeable lenses and saying that they're going to happen. Chris, you were interested in this one. You saw this as kind of pointless.
I'm trying to remember, the link said something right in it that made me question this whole idea.
Well, making lenses, apparently, is going to be the problem.
Sure. You can stuff a full-frame sensor into any camera. That's not the hard part. The hard part is they've been making this whole series of lenses with a lens mount, you know, an image circle, all for APS-C size sensors.
Yeah. But
so I honestly think it's a dumb idea. I think it's dumb. I mean, it's just they're already making full frame sensors for their full frame DSLRs. They've got a whole series of lenses for it. It doesn't make any sense to try and do the same thing with a format which they've already made all these lenses for to be a smaller image circle.
Yeah,
I think it's nonsense.
Your realistic cropping is not going to change unless you can move your lens further away. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one of the issues with the EFS lenses over the EF lenses in the Canon series, and I'm guessing there's an equivalent on Nikon, is the fact that the bayonet goes further into the body, therefore it can hit the smaller sensor. You stick a full-frame sensor in, it's not going to make any difference whatsoever unless that lens can then come further away.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about adapter rings, and once you start using adapter rings, then the actual length of that lens is going to start to be multiplied.
Right.
So you're going to need an 18mm lens to be able to get in the same room as what you're trying to shoot. Because I imagine, I mean, if you're talking about the normal crop factor of around 1.5 or 1.6 or whatever it is, if you start having to put actual, you know, rings in between the lens and the camera, your magnifying factor is going to get to 3 very, very quickly.
Mm.
And it's going to be bordering on useless. And if they start making lenses that do this, then they're not going to fit anything else.
Now, Kev, any thoughts?
This is outside my frame of understanding a lot of.
No, it's all right. No worries. I barely keep up with it myself. Talking of adapters, thank you, Alex, for that. There's supposedly Metabones adapters for Leica R and Nikon F lenses are coming out as well. These things have got, looks like they've got a mount on them for tripods as well on the underside there, unless that's just a little support stand. Price is 10,700 yen, or about 100 euros, $140. They don't look like they're electrically powered, though. These look like dummy... They're almost like a macro tube, effectively, I would guess, but with an adapter.
Yeah, I mean, it's not particularly difficult to be able to mount one lens onto another fitting as long as you're not doing anything particularly clever with it.
It's whether you can keep the autofocus or not, which
this is what I'm looking at. I'm looking at them, and it looks like the sort of thing that you'd do as a student to make up a dummy representation of something.
Mm.
I can understand why it would work, but I can't understand why you'd want to really go to the trouble of doing it.
No, I mean, $140, that's pretty expensive for just something that's marrying two bayonets together, and he's going to have an issue over crop factoring as well as, though, Chris, no?
Well, I mean, you've got all the...
Did I lose you?
No, you're still here, mate. Hello?
Oh, okay, there you go.
Right, sorry. Go on, Chris.
You've got all the mechanical linkages for the aperture control and the electronics and all the adapter thing. I think it's not just a simple, carved metal.
No, I agree. So, normally you would, but this picture we've just seen, I can't see anything in that picture that suggests that it's anything other than two different fittings being able to be...
Exactly, yeah, that was
It's got a Fuji on the back and a Nikon or Leica on the front. That's all I can see in the picture. I hope for that price. It's an awful lot more technically advanced than that.
I mean, these things are regularly available on eBay at around $100. And I'm just looking at one here for Nikon F-mount and trying to find out any further information. But... The look of these things, and I'm purely going on what I see on the look and what I see on eBay, it doesn't make it look as though it's passing an awful lot of electronic information through. This is probably just a dumb blank of one to the other. I think the thing that gives it away as well is there's no contact sensors on the on the ring as well. So there's none on the front. I've got a picture of the back here on eBay. And there's no contact sensors on the back either. They're just screw mounts. That's it. That's a lot of money. $140 just for two bayonets. Ouch.
Well, but they've got contacts?
They've got loads, yeah. If you go on eBay, we'll put a link in the show notes. When you go to that story, you'll see it. There's an absolute stack of them on there. And they go for Contax G lens to Fuji X Pro 1 and all sorts. There's stuff all over the place on it.
I remember years ago I wanted a Contax G so bad. Contax G2.
And then you were 10.
I'm going to get a Contax G2 and a handful of lenses and that's it. That's all I'm going to ever need. And
when I grew up, I wanted to be a fireman.
Fireman Sam. What do you fancy next? What about VS... CO keys. These are a set of keys which are programmable. You can use them in Lightroom to change all your shortcuts. This is a program. It's a plugin, effectively, I guess, is the way of looking at it. But it's $125.
I read that and I thought, well, $12.50, still a bit dear, but I'd go for it. Then I realised it said 125, and then I sort of... I just thought it was... I just checked. It wasn't April.
There's got to be a licensing fee with Adobe plugins, hasn't there? Because they're all ridiculously priced. I'm on, I can't remember, it begins with a T, and they do a whole pile of plugins, and they regularly want $400 or $125 for one filter or that kind of thing. And this thing wants $125, and all it does is let you put your own shortcuts in, which
I'm sure you can do anyway, can't you?
Well, on the Mac, I'm pretty sure you can.
Yeah, you can definitely do it in Photoshop. It's got its own shortcut creator thingy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just like looking at this thinking, my word, people have got too much money, haven't they?
The story does say that Lightroom doesn't in version 3 and 4, but Aperture does. So Aperture will let you have your own custom shortcuts, whereas Lightroom won't.
It's £600 for a card that you stick over the top of your keyboard to show you what button.
They're a ripoff. Go on, Kev.
There's a photographer here in the States that does a lot of seminars and workshops and things, and he is selling what appears to be the identical thing, and he's charging $349 for it. And I don't know how successful he is at selling them. I imagine he's got people buying them, or he wouldn't be carrying them with him everywhere he goes. But it's the same thing. It's just a small keypad that you plug in a USB and you basically program it to do your shortcuts and your actions. Now, I don't know if his come with actions. They might, but still, it's just a little piece of hardware you could probably pick up at Radio Shack to do the same thing. And like you said, you can program Photoshop to do a lot of your shortcuts you want, you know, anything you want. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah,
they even have, like, you can make a set of keyboard shortcuts and, like, swap them in and out because they had, I'm trying to remember which version this was, but they tried to make some shortcuts, like, be all the same across, like, Illustrator and InDesign and Photoshop.
Mm. Didn't work.
A few years back, and people were, like, really pissed because, you know, Photoshop always did blah-de-blah-blah, or Illustrator always did blah-de-blah-blah for so many years, and so you could load like these new shortcuts, or you could load like classic versions and all this different stuff you could do.
I mean, one of the things about shortcuts, I'll just explain a tiny bit more, is I find, for instance, Ewan does it to me sometimes when we're discussing a Photoshop problem or an idea or something. You don't say, go to levels and do this or that. You give the shortcut as if it's,
Command V, yeah.
You give the shortcut without having to go through, but you speak shortcuts. It's almost like shorthand in language as well. So when, say, I talk to Ewan about Photoshop, we talk to each other in the shortcuts. So for people that use Photoshop all the time, it's almost like a coding language. You'll say control this, control that, option this, option that, this, that, and the other. And that's the way we talk about it. So to be playing with these things, it's almost sacrilegious to Photoshop users that you'd even dare to question or change anything. It's just the whole idea of this. It's almost like a stenographer in a courtroom. They've got a machine now. The whole idea is it's a gubbins or a bit of software or a bit of hardware that it's your shortcut controller, but you know, for us that use it all the time anyway, I don't think it's particularly necessary.
No, maybe not. I think the ripoff. Chat room instantly, as soon as I said ripoff and it begins with the letter T, they've instantly come back with Topaz, everyone in unison.
I paid odd amount of my plugins that, for instance, went from CS, I think they stopped working in CS5. CS4, loads of my colour correction plugins just don't work anymore, and I've had to go to different makers.
Chatroom's pissed off at me with the GoPro. Thames Boater says, I blame you, and I bought a Hero 2 because he recommended it the other week. Sorry. Darren Griffin's gone into a whole load more specs and said, I thought about buying a Hero 2 just the other day. Now I'm glad I waited. Bastard. And also, someone's trying to sell it. Anyone want any Hero 2 stuff? If you do, see Ewan. Questions here. We've got some simple ones. For the panel, assuming, this is from Darren, for the panel, assuming similar pricing and no prior history of Canon or Nikon, no lenses, that kind of stuff, which is better, 6D or D600? Straightforward comparison. Blimey. And they're all scrabbling now to try and find some specs.
No, I'm just thinking about it.
For price, no object, says Darren. Well, I'm afraid price is an object on these because the Canon's £200 more expensive. It shoots at 20 megapixels. The D600 shoots at 24,
right?
4 megapixels, yeah. Both running CMOS sensors, full frame. Separation at five frames per second for the Nikon, 4.5 frames per second for the Canon. ISO range 50 to 102 400 on the ISO range on the Canon, and 25-600 on the ISO max on the Nikon, and that's shutter speed goes up to 1/4000th and same thing.
Well, really. Another what interesting thing for the Canon is it's got built-in Wi-Fi and GPS, which
right?
I think was smart.
Yep. But you know, having said that, it's got built-in Wi-Fi and GPS, but it doesn't actually link to the internet, does it? You're not talking about a dial-up connection here. This is it will transfer files on your home network and nothing more. Nikon do an add-on for that, don't they?
It's about 40 quid.
So it's that's 200 quid extra on something that's going to cost 40 quid extra if you go to the other side.
Well, I mean, I've got to be honest.
Even more extra for the GPS if you wanted to.
I've got to be honest. Just simply, I would say that the two cameras at the moment, Nikon are ahead. But that's just on spec.
Hang on a minute. I'm just joking.
I'm just saying they're close enough within what you can produce with both of these cameras that, you know, it really does just come down to, do you want to spend an extra £200 or not? Because of the Canon 6D will give you as good a shot as the D600 and vice versa. It literally is a case of £200. I would have said, if you look at the specs on the... Nikon have got this habit. They have really, really good numbers. And for the most part, you know, these numbers are doable. But they tend to push things to the point where they're not needed. So if a Nikon says, oh, you can stop down to X, Y, Z, and you're not going to get any grain or this, that, and the other, it's probably right, but you'd need to be shooting at a 1/6000th of a second for it to matter anyway. And that's what I'm saying. Canon don't seem to bother so much to just have really fancy numbers. So I would have said, you know what? I don't like the click on a Canon. I've always found it a bit girly. So I like the clunk of Nikon, and that's all it comes down to with these two.
It is a sexier clunk, I'll grant you.
That's where I fall on this one.
So, but I mean, you've got to be clearly objective here, and you're saying Nikon because it's genuine, the Nikon, not Nikon because you're a Nikon man.
Yeah, Nikon because genuinely, and I'd say genuinely just for the fact that it's £200 cheaper.
Right, so Kevin, you're next, mate. Yes or no, which one are you going for?
Well, I don't know that much about the 6D, but I can tell you I've had the 600 for about two, three weeks now, and I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. It's very lightweight. Its interface is very easy to work with. It's not a complicated camera. It's got a lot of bells and whistles that I may never use, but I've learned that they exist. So should I have the need to call on them, I can. A couple of things that I was dismayed to find that I did not know. It doesn't have a PC connection, which surprises me on a $2,000 camera. There's no PC connection. But then since I discovered that, I discovered a lot of articles that are saying PC technology is on its way out the door. Everything is remote and wireless. So why put a PC connection on a camera these days? So that's probably a fading technology and the reason why. It also didn't have a trip cord connection, which is the first time I've owned a camera I couldn't plug a trip cord into. But it has a wireless eye. For $20, I bought the little wireless remote to fire it. Problem with that is it's got about a two-second delay. So while it might be great for shooting architecture or interiors, it's not going to be great if you're shooting people. You can get 15, 20 feet away from it and shoot it from anywhere in the room, whether you're behind it or in front of it. There's a remote slave eye that'll pick up the signal you're sending. You've got to point it right at it. Those were two features that I expected to find on this camera that, you know, I just assumed would be there, and I just never noticed they weren't.
Chris, you've got a vote, and then I'll have the casting vote. Even if it's 3-0
Canon. I agree this is a tough choice, and I agree a lot of it really boils down to are you Canon or are you Nikon? Although, honestly, to me, the built-in GPS and Wi-Fi are appealing. You know, the Nikon has something you can buy and add it on, but then you've got to leave that flap open and have that thing sticking out, and that just makes me not very confident. You know, if I'm in the middle of a shoot with this stuff hanging off, is it going to fall off? You know, is something going to get in that flap, you know, because it covers up all your other ports? I like the idea that it's all built into the camera. And so, you know, I agree, $200 extra, maybe it's not worth it to everybody, but for me it is.
Okay, that's it then. And my vote, it's the Nikon. Sorry, that hurt.
No, I was waiting for this dramatic build-up, and there was going to be a drum roll.
It's the Nikon. It's the Nikon. And it's the Nikon because of the fact it's got the bigger ISO range. It's probably got a more usable ISO range at equivalent steps. So I'm not... I mean, generally speaking, any camera you buy, whatever the top-end ISO is, it provides you with a grossly unusable image. So whatever the range is, just realistically say, well, I'm probably going to get away with, in really, you know, marginal circumstances, one stop down from what they're suggesting. Mm-hmm. And I would say step by step, you'll probably find the Nikon will do a better low light job than the Canon will.
Really?
$200 or £200 separation on price. I know Darren's question says price, no object, but you can't ignore 200 quid in your pocket because that's another lens, maybe even two if you want something like the 1.8 or something like that for it. And the other thing that really throws it over the edge for me, you've got the extra pixels and that kind of stuff, but the Nikon's in stock and the Canon's out of stock everywhere you go.
That's true.
Yeah, so. That is a really good point, isn't it? You can buy a Nikon, but you can't buy a Canon.
Exactly. So, so Darren, my vote would be on it as well. It's unanimous, 4-0 Nikon.
Shh. Apart from Chris, who said Canon.
Well, he doesn't care. He doesn't shoot with anything. He likes the Wi-Fi, though, but I think Wi-Fi is irrelevant to me. And Wi-Fi is irrelevant to the three of us. I think your use of Wi-Fi, Chris, I get why you like the Wi-Fi and the photo syncing, because you take a wee shot and then it's available for posting straight away. And I've got an Wi-Fi card and never use it for the purpose that it's intended. So I don't think I'd really get any benefit out of GPS and Wi-Fi. Question from 10X. Continuing the thoughtful, dare I even say sensitive questions that you've been getting in the last couple of weeks about motivation and so on, which current photographers does the panel admire the most? Blimey. Forsman, start us off, sir.
I think this guy isn't a photographer anymore, but David LaChapelle is always been one of my biggest influences, I guess. Or
say Dave Chappelle?
David LaChapelle.
Not the comedian.
No. David LaChapelle, the photographer.
LaChapelle. You said Dave Chappelle.
David LaChapelle.
Is he a good comedian? The comedic photographer, David Chappelle.
Sounds like.
I've seen some of his work, made me laugh.
There you go. Go on.
Well, so he's your one. Just go around and each of us say the next one on the panel.
So
I think Kevin.
I think Kevin as well.
I would pick you guys, see?
Mutual
Admiration Society. Tim Kelly is somebody that I have a great deal of admiration for. Now, you haven't heard his name a lot unless we're in the portrait world. He has recently closed his retail-type studio, which was over here in Orlando, Florida. He's a very high-end portrait photographer and an extremely talented artist with a lens, and he makes his own prints and he does things by hand. He has now abandoned pretty much the digital technology as we are all using it, and has gone back to shooting with 8x10 and 5x7 view cameras. He is using up what little inventory he can find in the film and chemistry market to be able to do what he does. But he's commissioning himself around the country. He's got two agents, I believe, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, that is finding him. And he does portrait studies. He is not a trendy, proppy full of actions and filters type photographer. He is very much a painter of light, and that is something I've always admired about him. He's held true to his style throughout the entire digital revolution. He's been in business well over 30, 40 years now. But Tim Kelly, look for his name on the internet, Tim Kelly Portraits or something. But that guy is a master painter of light, and he's somebody that you might want to keep an eye out for, because I think he's about to he's moving into his next dimension of what he's doing as a photographer.
Okay, Alex.
Right, I'm looking up someone because I went to an exhibition recently and I really enjoyed it. Because I don't work in a type of photography where you tend to admire anyone else's work. I mean, we are artistic, but we're sort of we're artistic, but we have to stay within certain boundaries. And I'm trying to think of what exhibitions have I been to lately that were really good. And I just remembered the gallery, and I couldn't remember the photographer's name. And I just so looked it up, and it was his name is Daido Moriyama. I remember the Moriyama, but not his first name. He's a sort of Japanese New York artist. Been going quite a while, and this exhibition was the stuff he did in, I think it was in the 80s, and he did a lot of slightly sexy sort of tights, and this, I think this was called Tights and Lips, if I can find it. Yeah, Tights and Lips. But like I say, these are artists that are artists through photography. So I'm not sure if that's the sort of photography you're talking about, but you know, sort of the photography I'm involved in, sort of either art photography or artistic photographers. So all I can say is someone I looked at, Daido Moriyama, recently. It was a really nice exhibition, and I enjoyed it. It's at the Michael Hopland Gallery in off of the King's Road in London at the moment. But that's the only real answer I can give you, because it's the only person I've taken the time to look at their work in the last few months. So there you go.
There you go. Mine is a German guy called Thomas Kettner. He shoots a lot of advertising stuff. But the one thing I like about him is tone of his images. I'm always going on about, you know, white whites and dark darks in photographs. And I look at his stuff, and it's very pleasing to me, because I see a great tonal range across the image. And the whites are white and the darks are dark. And he manages to capture an awful lot of contrast in areas and light and shade between those two areas as well. So you get very, very dynamic, very, very stark images, but there's good tonal range across the whole thing. It's not just grey and underexposed or overexposed, which you get with a lot of current photographers.
Yeah. Anyone like Richard Avedon?
Never seen much of his work, to be honest.
Yeah.
Love Richard.
There we go. We got some people. We actually knew someone. Chat room likes Richard Avedon. No, that's you, Fawzi, typing in the chat room. Me. Sorry. DavidLaChapelle.com. You put that link in as well. Jolly good. Mm-hmm. We'll have to put those in the show notes. Thanks very much. Right. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They've done us rather proud, actually. September, we had 2 million downloads. For someone must have said something somewhere, because life went ballistic. We did 73 terabytes of downloads, which was just ridiculous. And UK2, server didn't fall over. Bandwidth got picked up. No one said a word. Love them to bits. Thank you ever so much. 2 million downloads is... I'm humbled. Thank you, everyone who's downloaded that. One episode of the photo show. We normally get sort of around 10 to 12,000 of the photo show at most. And we had 65,000 of one show go. So we're famous. Woohoo!
Was that the one I wasn't on?
Yeah, I think so. UK2 are great for anything you want for the web. You want to get a domain, you want to get VPS, VPN, co-location. They've got a site builder application that's just wonderful. They sponsor all of the British Tech podcasts, pick up all of the bandwidth without any kind of worry whatsoever or any kind of notes or well, back off a little bit, fellas. Video and audio. So thanks to them. Love them to bits. Please buy their service, because they keep us afloat. You can imagine that 73 terabytes of bandwidth as a bill to me would be unpayable. It's probably a house payment each month. And they give us that free of charge. So if you keep buying their service, they keep us on the air. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
Well, Ars Technica, as usual, arstechnica.com, or on Twitter at Forsmac.
Excellent. Alex, where are you?
I'm Alex D. Fox on Twitter.
Good man. And Kev, where are you, sir?
Kevin at, Newsom Studio. At Newsom Studio on Twitter or newsomstudio.com.
Thank you, mate. And if you've got anything in Tampa that you want taking, or in Chicago even in the next few days, you've got a bit of spare time that you're not drinking with Horsman.
I'm going to be up there for 3 days doing a little event shoot client, and looking forward to getting out of the studio and having a little fun with that D600.
Good man. It falls you want to play of it. That's the only reason he wants to meet you for lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Convince me.
I'll be putting two HD Heroes on HD2 Heroes on eBay. So I'll post the links in the chat notes and the service. See you next week.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.